Call Mike Church now. It's like giving yourself a lie detector test.
I like peace and quiet, and I don't need to listen to Barney Frank ranging in my ear.
Call 844-5-CRUSADE, The Mike Church Show, exclusively on the Veritas Radio Network's Crusade.
I do feel wretched, but any anti-imperialist group like ours must reflect such a divergence of interests within its power base.
Agreed. Francis? Yeah. I think Judith's point of view is very valid, Rich, provided the movement never forgets that it is the inalienable right of every man
or woman
to rid himself
or herself.
Agreed.
Thank you, brother.
Or sister. Where was I?
I think you finished.
Oh, right. Furthermore, it is the birthright of every man
or woman.
Why don't you shut up about women, Stan? You're putting us off.
Women have a perfect right to play a part in our movement, Reg.
Why are you always on about women, Stan?
I want to be one.
What?
I want to be a woman. From now on, I want you all to call me Loretta.
What?
It's my right as a man.
But why do you want to be Loretta, Stan?
I want to have babies.
You want to have babies?
It's every man's right to have babies if he wants them.
But you can't have babies!
Don't you oppress me.
Pressing you, Stan. You haven't got a womb. Where's the fetus gonna gestate? You're gonna keep it in a box?
Here, I have an idea. Suppose you agree that you can't actually have babies for having a womb, which is nobody's fault, not even the Romans, but that he can have the right to have babies.
Good idea, Judith. We shall fight the oppressors for your right to have babies, brother. Sister, sorry.
What's the point?
What?
What's the point of fighting for his right to have babies when he can't have babies?
It is symbolic of our struggle against oppression.
Symbolic of his struggle against reality.
Seen all their great movies, it seems. Because he was telling me just now, as I stoked up the Mike Curb congregation, Burning Bridges. Oh, this is a great opening scene as Clint Eastwood in the Willie's Jeep driving through the German lines, back to the American lines, and this song is playing in the background. That's exactly right.
Not in the background. It is over everything.
Yeah,
it's
no.
Not,
it's
not background. It's over. It's great.
One of my favorite scenes is when Telly Savalas goes in when they think they're getting their furlough, and he goes in to go in his barn in France, in northern France, and the lieutenant is in there taking measurements to see if he can get the yacht, or it's in Germany rather, see if he can get the yacht out of the garage and whether or not it's going to fit on the convoy. Now, you don't think about this, but you think about it in hindsight. The dude was going to steal somebody. He's going to take somebody's yacht or sailboat or whatever it was. And that's where Telly Savalas goes in. Now, look, Joe, we've been rained on, bombed on, mauled on. You got to give these guys a break, Captain. And the captain said, I'm sorry, Sergeant. He was Joe, right? When Telly Savalas was Joe, right? I think I have the soundbite.
We've been rained on, pushed on, bombed on, martyred on.
By the way, Father Matthew Schneider on the Twitter feed has a magnificent idea of what to do with Pokemon Go destinations, or suggested Pokemon Go destinations. Why not put Pokemon Go characters inside Roman Catholic churches where there is a confessional? No, no, it's not on the door outside. You actually have to go into the confessional. And, oh, look, there he is. Oh, blessed be Father for sin.
Why can't there be an app where you can follow the footsteps of the saints?
That would be a great app. Well, you know what? That might lead people to holiness. Mr. Warshauer, please. We don't want to lead people down a path of righteousness. This is America. Just blame the cops. Blame the cops and race relations, and all will be well. You path of the saints. Whatever. 844-527-8723 is the telephone number. Mike Church Show here on the Crusade Channel. This is Tom and the Brasker first up here today in place of the Three Stooges cutout. Tom, thank you for standing in. Mo, Larry, and Curly, thank you. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing well, Mike. How are you doing?
I am well.
Hey, I just wanted to mention some things about some of the consequences of our culture of fornication and these kids growing up without fathers. And we've got this sickness, and it's in every, I think, culture throughout at least the United States.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's most severe in the inner cities. My wife went to school in Chicago, and I know a lot of folks who grew up there and went through the Chicago public school system. And a couple of stories, one of them in particular was a guy, he's doing okay now, but when he was growing up, his friends would see him trying in school, trying to do well, passing tests, and he'd get jumped for it. They call him all sorts of terrible things and actually physically assault him because he was trying to better himself and do well in school.
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't have a father who was present, but his mother did what she could. You know, of course, they can only do so much.
That's right.
But she was a parole officer, and they lived in a bad part of town and would have home invasions frequently. And as a young child, he witnessed her taking a guy's leg off with a Desert Eagle because he was on drugs and breaking into their house. I just don't know how going through life like that with that kind of experience. I mean, talk about having the deck stacked against you. It takes a miracle just to become a decent human being.
Have you ever seen, it's a 1940s, I think. You ever seen the film, The Babe Ruth Story?
I have not.
I want to say that Mickey Rooney plays very young George Herman Ruth, Babe Ruth. You know the story, right? You know that he was left on the doorstep of an orphanage when he was a kid, right?
Well, yeah, he was in a Catholic mission school, I think, or something like that.
That's exactly right. Now think what happens to a George Herman Ruth if there is no Catholic mission home there for him to be left at. One, he's either aborted, heaven forfend, or two, he's raised in some horrifically unstable single-parent household environment. And I dare say that the end is quite dramatically different than the end that we know of. Now, I only bring that up as one example that we tend to view the modern world and the world in which we live through the lens of what the only thing that we have to compare it to. And you and I, and I'm a geezer at 54. I don't know how old you are, Tom. But you and I don't have any personal knowledge of ever visiting or even knowing where a Catholic mission orphanage was. Do you?
I know that in the back here we've got Boys Town, which doesn't serve exactly the same function as it used to, but that's how it started.
Well, I don't know. I can't tell you. Now, I know. I take that back. If you go into old uptown New Orleans, Shay, if you go to old uptown New Orleans, around where Children's Hospital is, there is an old it's an old Catholic school, and it has around it the most beautiful. I think it's on Britannia and. Gosh, if somebody's listening, David, if you're listening, you know where I'm talking about. David Simpson, give me a ring or a text message. You can see that there was a beautiful, once upon a time, beautiful, beautiful, beautiful school behind this beautiful, maybe even a monastery, a seminary of sorts, behind this magnificent 8-foot-tall brick fence that surrounds the entire perimeter of the property. And where there isn't brick, there's iron that you can see through, and you can see the playground, and you can see the where the schoolyard was, and there's some maintenance houses there, etc. I seem to recall when daughter number two and I were down there a couple years back and were walking around that on one of the buildings that was on the property, there was some sort of signage there that led me to believe that was, once upon a time, an orphanage of sorts. So I do know where one was, and it's in that part of New Orleans. But that day is gone. The welfare state, the civil religion of America, now the police department and the public school systems have taken the place of what genuine Christian charity used to perform, Tom. And I think we have to use that terminology correctly. It's Christian charity. That's what was being performed there in those orphanages. And no, they weren't perfect. Well, do you know about the abuse? I'm sure there were problems. Man is fallen, you idiots. This idea here that if it's run by an ecclesiastical authority, that's going to be perfect and pristine and holy and pure is just ridiculous. But in any event, my point is that those institutions, those entities, and the men and women that committed their lives as brothers and sisters to those entities are gone. You know, it's not even that far out of our own adult memories. Where in the state of California, Sally Field could begin her acting career as what, Tom?
I don't know.
The Flying Nun. The Flying Nun. It was a hit television show. She was at a convent in San Diego or Santa Barbara. That's in the 1970s when I was a little boy. That's how it, recent in memory. Now, you look around. Do you know where there's a convent at near you? I know where there is one. And a raving, maniacal communist lives there, as I am told.
FYI. Nuns are penguins, and penguins can't fly.
Yeah, we have a convent in Omaha. I just don't know much about it. But I do think it's another side effect of the state pushing religion out of our lives and supplanting the services that it used to provide.
That's right.
The church used to be central to every community, to every individual. Your life revolved around your faith. I look at it sort of like the movie Fight Club, to where in the beginning he's talking about he's got a single serving this and that, single serving friends. Well, now we have a single serving religion, single serving faith. Oh, well, I'm going to sit down to dinner. Let me open up my little single serving religion so I can say grace before the meal. Okay. Somebody's getting married. Let me open my single serving religion here. I'll go to church and attend the marriage service.
Tom,
And then little pieces here and there, my single serving religion for this and that, but it's, by God, it's not going to take over my life.
Yeah, Tom, I think that's correct. We're up against a hard break, Tom. I got to go. No, we're good? Okay, sorry. No, I think that's correct. And I also think that when you say that you have your single-serving religion, that's a really good explanation of it, because we tend to compartmentalize it. Let's break it down into little compartments. Yes, 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 I can do this. No, I don't have to do that. Well, we don't have to do that. Well, I could do that. Well, you're not required to do this. It's like this, and this has taken root in the last 40 years in the Catholic Church. I can't speak to the Protestant denominations because I'm not familiar enough with them, but I'm sure they have similar experiences. And that is, and I usually tell this story every Friday, that when I fast on Friday, someone is going to ask me, when they offer me a piece of steak at a party or something if I go to, or a piece of fried chicken or sausage, whatever it is, and I'm just polite. And I don't even ever say, no, I'm fasting today. I just politely decline. No, I'm good. That's all I got to do. And then all it takes is them for one person to whisper in the other ear. That's a wacko Catholic crap. You know, old Mike would have eaten that, but now I'm a stupid Catholic Mike. Party pooper. And then I get, oh, well, where's that in the Bible? Where's that in the canon? Where's any canon law? Where's that? Doesn't have to be. It's part of a life. It's part of an attempt to direct myself, and I'm sure there are others out there that do this as well, to try to direct ourselves into an existence, and into living our lives not always fixated and obsessing over the material, and instead knowing that, I mean, there's two types of people, I think, Tom. Two types of people these days. I suppose there were two types of people back during the ages of faith, but there were far less of the first kind. First type of person is a person that suspects that there is a spiritual world, but he doesn't really believe it. When he goes to church, he doesn't really feel the real presence. And of course, he's not in a certain church. He's not going to feel the real presence when the host is consecrated and elevated. But he doesn't really feel the real presence, and he's not really sure that there really is a spiritual world and that there really is a heaven. Yeah, there may be something to it, but I'm not convinced about it. But he's certainly sure that there is evil, and he's certainly sure that all the monsters in the movies can actually occur, and that the aliens are coming to snuff us out. And he's sure of that supernatural world, but he's not sure of the good one. That's about 90% of people roaming this planet today. And they may even think that, oh, well, I believe in the mysticism of Buddha. You know, I never saw God before, but, you know, I felt his peace, and I felt the spirit through Buddha or through Vishnu or Confucius or whatever. Just heretical nonsense. No, you didn't. You felt a breeze flow, you idiot, you heretic. Second type of person. I shouldn't say idiot, arrogant, prideful heretic. Second person actually does think. I suppose there are three. The third type would be, no, there is no spirit. There's only the material world. I am a materialist. I am a monist. You're an idiot. We're all going to die, and that's all there is to it. Shut up. Yeah, Alistair, what was the guy on the Beatles album? Alistair Cook? Who is the Satanist? I think it's Cook.
Not a clue.
Whatever his name. Then the second type is the person's, and you know, I'm giving way too high of a percentage. I said 90, 10. No. It is 98 atheists, Alistairs, demonologists, etc., and then 2%, the 2% of the planet left that does believe, not because they just believe and it's a leap of faith, they've actually felt the real presence. They know that there is an eternal battle going on between angels and demons. They know that the struggle is real, that there is good, that there is truth, and there is beauty. They know that there is a force that wishes to snuff it out. They know that they are created contingent beings. And because there's so few of those people remaining that feel that small, that remnant, that 2%, it is not part, that therefore then is not part of way children are raised and people live their lives. And I think it becomes that much more of a challenge to even attempt to have and to live according to that kind of a spiritual life. But I don't think that it was meant that I don't think that it's hard. Generically speaking.
That's one of the great things about Veritas, I think. is listening to Brian Grant and Brother Andre. I tell you, I had an old friend of mine who is now a Baptist pastor. I sent him a couple links from Veritas because I thought there were things he'd find interesting from like My Story of America and that sort of thing. And so he took the opportunity to try to convert me to baptism. Or to be a Baptist, I mean. And really, before I really tried to truly educate myself, other than, you know, just the standard Sunday stuff, I wouldn't have been able to do much other than say, no thanks, that's not for me. But now I started sending him little excerpts from St. Robert Bellarmine. trying to beat that.
Yeah.
Without Veritas, I wouldn't be able to do that.
I would never have won the ball. That's right. Aleister Crowley is the demonist. But the point I was getting at is the 2% that are living this life and are trying to live this life, it's not that hard to do. And I don't think God made it that hard. I think the modern world, we try to pretend or we buy into it that no one can live like that, Mike. Please, Mr. Church, it's impossible. It's not impossible. He would not have made living according to the gospel or living according to the example set by the incarnate wisdom himself. You know, we can't be him, certainly. You know, we're not meant to be. We're meant to imitate. And that's the best you're ever going to do. We're fallen men possessed with original sin. You can't be him, but you can imitate. And we're told today that it's too hard, that it's impossible. It's not impossible. It's not too hard. Gentlemen are capable of being in the same room with beautiful women and not lusting after them. It is possible. It may be difficult, but it's not impossible. It is possible to fast on Fridays or maybe even once per day and to actually gain something out of it. It's not drudgery. I don't... Here, I'll just offer this. I don't, like, sit there and have nightmares on Thursday night and Friday morning when I'm sleeping, knowing that I'm not going to eat on Friday. And I go, oh man, Friday's coming. Oh no, God, please, oh. I don't fear it. I actually look forward to it. For what you're going to get out of denying yourself, mortifying your body, denying yourself something that the material world tells you you must have. No, I'm going to defy you. And you know what it allows you to do, Tom? And I say this to all listeners, regardless of ecumenism or denomination, it doesn't matter. You know what it allows you to do? When you are placed in a situation, when you are tempted to overindulge, when you are tempted to go slut, when you're tempted to go horn dog, when you are tempted to, all right, I'll look at the porno movie with my buddies, when you're tempted to do these things, that denial, that mortification does allow you. It's a grace that you get. It does make it easier to say no with a great conscience and be good-spirited about it. I don't admonish anyone. He's like, well, you guys, you're a bunch of heathen. Don't ever call me again. I can just sometimes say no. No, anyway, you guys go ahead. I'm going over here. I'm go home and get myself another drink or whatever the case may be. So in other words, the little conversation that we've been having here is the kind of conversation that ought to have been part of talk radio airwaves since there's been talk radio. And that's another thing of what we're trying to do here. Why aren't there conversations like the one you and I are having right now? I think this is healthy and productive. Do you?
It definitely is. It's just tough. It's hard to break yourself out of the mold and to inject morality and faith into an everyday conversation in a secular environment, because you're constantly on guard that somebody's going to report you and you might get a demotion or be ostracized or rejected from some kind of social group. Well, maybe that's a good thing. I don't know, but it's the material consequences. It's tough to detach yourself from that.
Well, it definitely is, and as I've heard it said before, it sometimes requires heroic acts of virtue. Well, you know, sometimes maybe some of us are called these days to try to be little heroes in any way that we can. And I don't think that's asking too much. And I bet there are more stories of heroic virtue out there. People are just too, like you said, they're just too bashful, or they fear for loss of that economic security blanket. They don't want to jeopardize their place in the secular world. They like their elevation in life. They like their 15 cars sitting in the driveway. They like working for the defense contractor that's blowing children and women to kingdom come in Yemen right now with the products that they make. They don't care. They like all. They're not going to detach from that. Mark Kressler said something the other day that I thought was just so spot on and truthful and simple. And he said, these people that are in on the fix, that are in on the $4 trillion buffet, that sit down at it, or are getting their serving of the buffet from someone else who was sitting at it, they're not just going to give their paychecks up and their careers up. They're not. Even if the truth smacks them right between the eyes, they're still not going to do it. They're going to reject the truth, and they're going to say, no, this is what I'm doing is fine. And they're going to convince themselves that they remain on the erroneous course. So all we can do is try and lead by example. Tom, it's all we got. Listen, brother, I appreciate the call and the conversation. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Mike. I'll be listening.
All right. You know what? I'll be counting on that. And I actually will be counting it, too. It's Mike Church Show here at 844-527-8723. Now, after that conversation, most of you, as many of you, will be like when the light turns on and the bugs that are light resistant are on the floor and they run for the woodwork. Many of you are going to now scatter, or some of you are going to go like, gosh darn it, my story is virtuous enough, I can tell it well enough, and gosh darn it, people like me are going to call and pick up. You're going to call for the first time ever on the Crusade Channel. You're going to get the free America's Secede or Die t-shirt because you can't wait to jump in on this conversation and prove that it's not just me, Tom, Brother Andre, Christopher, and David Simpson. Call 844-527-8723.
I'd like to make an announcement.
Yes.
Reconquest episode that was supposed to air yesterday evening at 7 Central, I made a boo-boo, will air at 11 today and then Friday at 7 p.m. tomorrow.
In its entirety.
In its entirety.
In its entirety. Well, there you go. All right, we'll take our time out then. On that, 844-527-8723. VeritasRadioNetwork.com/join to become a Founders Pass member today. If you like what you heard during the last conversation, we need your support. This is the Mike Church Show here on the Veritas, on the Crusade Channel, part of the Veritas Radio Network. Radio the way it should be.